This is the Gwinnett County Public Library podcast. I'm Steve Thomas, the branch manager of the Buford Sugar Hill branch, and we are here talking about some staff who attended, well, I'll go ahead and call the Georgia Library Conference. They've changed the name for next year. That's much more descriptive than saying what it actually is called. So we're going to talk about a little bit about some of the sessions that people attended. We'll start with Don. Don, can you introduce yourself and then talk about some sessions?
Yeah, my name's Don. I work in youth services at the library, and this was actually my first ever conference, so it was an interesting experience. I had no idea what to expect, and it took me a little while to navigate even how to register in the morning because there was really no clear direction. But I got to go to several sessions on the full day on Thursday and heard some interesting things. So I went to one about engaging teens with passive programming. And there was a lot of kind of basic stuff I think a lot of our teen reps probably would have been very familiar with after trawling through blogs and Facebook. But the basic message of it was engage teens with things they want, not with things you think they want. Don't rely on Facebook because teens don't use Facebook anymore. And they mentioned a couple interesting technologies. One was Remind 101, which is a messaging app that I'm not sure quite how it works, but maybe Jody has a better idea.
I am shaking my head. I do have a teenager. It's more commonly used in middle school and high school. Teachers will use that as a way to push out text messages, reminding them of assignments and other things that are coming up. So it's a quick and easy way for them to update information that they want their students to have.
Do you think this is something the library can do with the schools?
You don't need to do it with the schools. Remind 101 is something that you could sign up for yourself. So you could create your own email list to blast out at. And it's something we might want to consider, especially for our teen reps, if they wanted to send out reminders prior to TAC meetings and other things that are about to come on.
Hmm. Okay.
Teen reps, take note.
After that, I went to one, it was called Outreach in Academic Libraries, so it wasn't completely applicable to us, but I found it very interesting because there was a long discussion on library anxiety, and this wasn't a term I'd really heard before, but it struck a chord with me, and I can see it. I've been doing a lot of outreach recently with Spanish-speaking communities, so when I go out and I do these presentations, I also give a visual presentation of what the library is actually like and how exactly they can utilize their cards to use all the technology, so when they walk into the library, they're not completely overwhelmed. So I found this concept of library anxiety very helpful in my approach to these communities, and I think that was by far the most interesting part of this session. The rest was kind of a description of interesting programs they had done to bring university students into the library, things like Halloween zombie scavenger hunts inside the library at night. So it was very interesting, but not entirely applicable. But I liked the idea of library anxiety, and I've been using that in my own outreach.
Well, that's why I like going to sessions like that when I go to conferences, go to something that's not directly applicable to you, because you can get things like that out of a session that, well, that's, you know, because it's probably listed on the conference planner as this is for academic librarians, so you wouldn't necessarily go, but you obviously got something out of it, so it's useful to do this cross-pollination.
Yeah, I think the next time I go to a conference, I'm going to go out of my way to go to sessions that I don't know anything about. But I was a little bit torn because I want to go to sessions that I'm familiar with so I can pass that information on to the people I work with. But at the same time, I don't want to sit through a session where all the information is familiar. So I think you need to create a little bit of a balance in the sessions you pick and choose.
Well, and an important conference rule is you don't have to stay for a session. You can always, it might make the speakers feel a little bad to see people walking out, but you're paying to be there, so you get up and walk out and go to another session if you don't like it. So.
Okay, that makes me feel good. All right, I'm not going to feel bad next time I go to one of these. Then I saw one. It was on Harry Potter parties, which a lot of it was very familiar, but this one was actually very impressive. The speaker, I think, was from a library in South Carolina. She was a young woman, and she was super enthusiastic, and it was absolutely amazing what she had gotten organized. She had gotten someone in her library system to build big PVC pipe rings for an actual Quidditch game that they could set up in one of their bigger meeting rooms. For the last 2 years, she's done 2-week-long Harry Potter camps where kids come in every day. They have a sorting hat where they actually managed to sneak a speaker into it and had someone outside the room speaking as if they were the sorting hat. It was all really impressive. The most tangible thing I took away from it is that Scholastic offers a free kit for Harry Potter parties, and there's an international Harry Potter night February 2nd. I think at least Collins Hill is participating this year, but you can get this kit for free if you reach out through the official Harry Potter International Book Party website. So that's something I can share with people if they're interested. The last thing of the day was the keynote speaker, and like the academic library session, it wasn't extremely applicable, but it was fascinating. The gentleman's name was Eric Fadden. He's an assistant professor of film and media, and he was talking about copyright rule. Jody, did you send this session?
I did.
So he had a video called A Fairy Use Tale, and it was entirely comprised of clips taken from Disney movies. And if Disney would have pursued prosecuting him for copyright use, I think he calculated he could have been charged with like 900 years of jail sentencing. But the basic message, his basic thesis was that in the digital age, in our day and age, information is very fleeting. So one interesting example he mentioned was that he and his wife were watching a Netflix video that he was really excited about this movie. He had it pulled up there halfway through, and it got taken down because Netflix had lost its copyright usage for it, and it was gone. So this is something that could happen potentially with ebooks, e-audiobooks that we have in our collection. So his argument was that we need to help customers not only be media literate in understanding how to read and digest information, but we need to teach them, people need to know how to be media competent. They need to know how to copy media, how to transcribe media, how to convert it into other forms. Because if information is fleeting, we all need to be miniature information pirates and know how to copy that for ourselves if it's something we need, because there's the potential that it's just not going to be there anymore. So I was really, really interested. I don't know how that applies to our public library so much, but I thought it was fascinating. What did you think, Jody?
It was great. It was very entertaining the way he presented it, and definitely for academics to let individuals who are writing papers, now that they're submitted online, to make sure that they are staying within the law as well, because a lot of kids, freshmen in that college, didn't realize the you know, the plagiarism, and they're just used to copying and pasting and sticking it in there. And so it was very entertaining. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I think he also made the point that people need to be aggressive in asserting their copyright rights themselves and not let, you know, people who hold these copyrights bully them into not using it in what is a legal way. So I think copyright rule is, law is changing all the time. But he made it clear that it's going to change for the public's detriment if the public doesn't stand up and assert its right in using these things.
Yeah, no, copyright can be tricky because when you assert fair use, is the only way to rule on fair use is to actually go to court and have a judge tell you if fair use was. So yeah. the statute, I guess, is very vague in that you can say, well, it was fair use. And they're like, okay, well, I'm suing you anyway. And a year later, hundreds of thousands of dollars later in legal fees, and then you might figure out if you actually were in the right. So.
Yeah, he mentioned that they've recently changed all the rules, copyright rules, for using movies and copying DVDs and making your own copy. And so now universities, university students, university professors have the right to make a copy of a DVD for their own use if they see fit. High schools do as well. But kindergarten through eighth grade does not. And he said they don't simply because they didn't ask for it. So it just asking for it, it might be enough to have that change.
Yeah, some of this comes out of that lawsuit with our local Georgia State, because they had those things on reserve, and then the publisher sued them saying you can't have copies on reserve because we want people to buy all that stuff instead. And so, and I believe it keeps going back and forth in appeal, but I believe right now Georgia State's in the right now, but there's still appeals, I think, on the other end. So I think it may go all the way to the Supreme Court for all I know. But
Yeah. So it was a very interesting day. I enjoyed going. I'm looking forward to going to the Mini Institute next Friday for ALC. ALSC?
ALSC.
So many acronyms. I'll get them down eventually.
Jody?
Oh, sure. I'm Jody Capello. I'm the Assistant Branch Manager at Decula. I went to several sessions, but I'm only going to highlight two. I thought they were very applicable to our strategic plan. The first one was maximizing the potential of your library with community partnerships. And the beginning of the session had you think more about your community. They asked you to take a look at the elements of value pyramid and to get an understanding of how your community defines value and build on that, similar to the find out what it is they want as opposed to simply giving them what you think they want. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing there. So for you to look at the community and find out, are they looking for things of a social impact or something that's life-changing, something emotional or something functional. So they went over that for a little bit. Then they recommended that you mobilize the community assets instead of starting from scratch, see what the community already has. Looking at nonprofits, but also for-profit organizations, businesses that are around, that are meeting the needs and building on that, or just partnering with them so that it's making it more accessible to the community as a whole, as opposed to just those individuals who are by that business.
And that's kind of what we've done with Goodwill. You know, we had the JobSmart stuff, and I was kind of like, well, we're duplicating effort there, so...
That's true. And the Goodwill is in one location of the county, but the county's really big. So it's nice to see that they're coming out to branches that are not as close to their central location. And that's exactly what we're talking about. So they recommend that you utilize the resources of individuals, which is something that we've done when we've had individuals come in who have an interest in arts and teach a class in art, to go ahead and keep doing that, that's something to think about. To be creative to what the library can contribute, to define the library as a space for community activity. And this is something that a lot of our branches are doing now. We're putting on a lot of more programming that makes the building a sense of space. It's a location to come and be offline and be in real time and have the community think of you that way. And to initiate involvement of volunteers, but that kind of goes back to using individuals. You know, you might already have someone in your branch volunteering, doing shelving, who has a skill of interest to the community. Tap into that. Use that.
So what do you think, how do you think Gwinnett, our county, values, you know, according to that pyramid, what do you think, how do you think it applies to our community?
Well, I think it applies in different areas. I mean, our county is so vast that in different areas, they're looking for different things. And so in some of our areas that are economically challenged, you would be looking at life-changing programs. You'd be bringing in job seeking opportunities or ESL classes or something of that would be a life-changing. But in areas that are well-established and upper mobility, you'd be looking more, you know, recreational, kind of emotional things, feel good activities. Hmm. So it kind of just depends where in the county you are. That's my interpretation of it.
Well, that's why it's important for branch management to understand their individual communities to see, so we don't have just the one size fits all. It's like, well, we're doing this program at every single branch. That doesn't make any sense because you want to tailor it to your communities.
Yeah, that rings very true.
Yeah. So that was very interesting. They wanted to talk about partnerships and developing them, that they could be anyone in your community, that you would be working towards a common goal, that you want to meet with them and you want to set the partnership for a reasonable time, and that you want to have an agreement among the partners that the partnership is needed, which even is an agreement of dissolution, that you might come to a time where the partnership is no longer necessary and that you agree to go ahead and no longer continue with it. Mm-hmm. Knowing that in advance is a good thing so that nobody's feelings get hurt. Understanding the value of what each partner can contribute and looking, and then she had this whole asset-based community development. She was planning, the presenter planned a healthcare and wellness day at her branch. So she had a very big program in which she had multiple partners all coming in. Walgreens was doing blood pressure checks. A local clinic was coming in and giving wellness classes. I think she even had the local grocery store in, like the person from produce who was talking about how to, you know, pick good vegetables. Mm. So she had a lot of them going on. And so she talked about how she created a spreadsheet and that she had to be very organized, definitely had to have a timeline of communication, you know, initial contact, arranging date, doing follow-up contact and all of that. She was said, plan early and market a lot. That, you know, you need to get out to a lot of different areas in the community and market there. Just marketing at your branch is not going to help because you're only going to get the people who are coming. But, you know, when you're giving these programs and services, there are a lot of people that deserve them and need them as well, but they may not come. Maybe they have library anxiety,
right.
And don't want to come to the building. So getting out into the community to market the item, be it verbally or with flyers or something mm-hmm. of that nature. So.
Sounds great.
So it was pretty informative. Yeah. Do you want me to do the next one?
Sure.
Along the lines of partnerships, the next one I went to was forming partnerships to meet the needs of older adults. This one was presented by Jacqueline Jones of Henry County and Fairview Public Library. And she did programming for older adults, but not at her branch. She did them off-site at the location for the adults. So she did it at a senior community center. It was an already established location that the seniors knew. But she knew that the library had services she could bring in to expand what was being offered there. So instead of just coming for exercise classes, they could also come in and pick up materials to read and go to programs that she could present. So she talked about developing that partnership. She said, make note of the businesses in the area that are already serving the needs of seniors so that you know where they are and you can go to them. Make the initial connection and designate a point of contact. It's best to find an individual that you can continually have communication with as opposed to jumping around amongst staff at that location. And also for you to give them one individual to communicate back with so they don't feel like, well, I call you and I just kind of get whoever and I don't feel confident whether or not the communication's gone through or not. So you want to make it very streamlined. Set up a meeting to gain an understanding of each other's needs, similar to the last one. Keep asking the seniors what they want. Just because they're seniors doesn't mean that what they want is always going to stay the same, that they too have ever-changing needs, and you want to keep asking them to see what it is they want to do, want to learn, want to see, want in a collection. She wanted to talk about be prepared to serve them. Use surveys to find out their interest and design the collection that you bring, pop-up library that you bring to them, specifically for them. Don't bring them what you think they want. Bring them what they tell you they want. And go often. Develop trust. They need to get used to you. If you can't be sending different staff all the time, they want to develop a personal relationship with you. You need to develop a personal relationship with them. It brings a level of comfort and confidence that they know that you'll be back. It's not necessarily something you want to do as a one and done. You want to be consistent. You know, the second Tuesday of every month, a library lady is going to be there, or library lady. And take notes. You want to go ahead and take notes of what they're telling you so that you know that you're always giving them what they want.
Yeah, I think making a personal connection at the outreach or even programs in branch is the biggest key to success because you're not always going to be fully prepared every time. But if you can make some kind of personal connection and they remember you, they're going to walk away with a positive experience and want to come back again. So I think that is absolutely right.
Tanya?
So my name is Tanya Almack. I went to the Friday session of the conference, which was a half day, where I ran into Jody.
Yes.
And we went to one of the same programs, actually. But the one that I first went to when I got there was the one about GLASS, which is the Georgia Libraries for Accessible Statewide Services, which is their little, you know, acronym is GLASS. Basically, it's a service that anyone who lives in Georgia can take part of. It's great for people that are either visually impaired or can't read on their own or physically can't actually hold books to actually be able to read them. So it can be more than just visual impairment. But it's basically an organization that provides Braille books or audio books to their customers. And the way that it works is there's different devices that they can actually use based on their needs. And they just send them out the part that they need for their device. And they can do it all by mail. They can send things back and forth. They can actually call and get reader's advisory. So they don't even have to know what they're looking for. They can just say, I like stories like this, and they'll start sending them things. They do have a catalog that can be searched that they call Bard. And you can actually sign someone up for services at your branch. You can print off the form and help them fill it out. And normally where it says that, a medical person needs to certify that this person is in need of these services. The biggest thing that I learned was that a librarian can do it, and they don't actually have to go to the doctor to do that. So if you have someone at your branch who is unable to physically hold a book or can't read very well, because of visual impairment or another issue, and they need, special services just directed for them, it's great service because they can just sign up to get items from Glass. They don't even have to leave their house, really. They can do all of these things, and you can actually have a librarian at your branch certify them, so they don't actually have to go and make a doctor's visit just to get that taken care of, which was the one thing that I had never heard in all of my years of hearing about Glass. My session was actually done by Stephanie Irvin, who used to work at GCPL. She's one of their outreach coordinators, and she does a third of the state of Georgia. And they're currently, she's not in our area, our service area, but she told me that she really, really liked to come visit us in Gwinnett, so she knows so many of us. But that's pretty nice. But it was really fascinating, actually, because there were a lot of parts of that I didn't really know, and we got to play with the devices and the actual players that they have that they can use to listen to books or to get different materials, and it was actually pretty interesting to me.
What I found interesting for Glass is that their technology is adjusting, just like what ours are. I used to think Glass, and I used to think those big, clunky,
talking tape books.
Players. But they actually, the Bard catalog that's searchable has a lot of downloadable materials. So for younger, more technically savvy people, or older technically savvy people, they can have a device in their home that they can download the materials straight to their device. And their device will adjust. We got to play with them, which was great. Their device will adjust to whatever their need is. So if they're not fully visually impaired and can see but need it larger, the device will enlarge it, or they'll read it for them. So I thought that was really great, because it really expanded the amount of resources that they have to give to the state of Georgia.
What's great about the Glass staff as well, as part of their outreach, they'll tell you how to use your device just normally to use the accessibility features. Because, the iOS, Android, they have accessibility features in there already that'll read you everything on the screen, that'll get larger text, it'll turn, it'll do the reversed where it's white background, black letters, or black background, white letters, to make it easier for you to read. So there's lots of stuff just built into these things already.
I actually learned that very thing when a child with their amazing little magical fingers managed to change one of the kid iPads in the library to black and white, and took me a good half an hour to figure out how to get it back.
It's amazing what kids will do.
It is. It's interesting. There's a location in Atlanta for Glass also that people can go visit and do different things at. It's kind of fascinating, really. It's a good service, and I think a lot of our patrons don't really know about it. Customers, patrons, whichever.
Stephanie said that, if you're interested, she is an outreach person. We have an outreach person in our zone, and we could contact them, and they will come out, and they'll do a presentation. So I know by Swanee, there is a home for individuals who have had brain trauma. So if we wanted to make arrangements with that group to have someone from Glass come out to present to them, that would be able to give them services that maybe they didn't know they had access to.
I think it was our outreach person that came to our staff day last year to tell staff about that. So
yeah.
they're available to come out to speak to us, to your staff, or to out to your community. You can make that connection for them. So.
She did say also that they haven't quite got it up and running yet, but they're doing like sort of print on demand or audio on demand. So there may be a chance in the future that they'll have the ability, if they don't have something already done, that someone could submit that they want that material available to them, and they would be able to make that happen.
So although we don't do academic, you know, for esoteric works that someone's looking for, that they'll never find that way, they'll be able to get that, whereas right now they don't have access to that.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. All right. Do you guys have anything else that you want to share about the conference before we wrap up? Anything else that you've learned that you brought back or anything?
Conferences are a great opportunity to go to network, meet individuals from different areas of librarianship. Going to something that's academic, even though we're public, is a great thing to do. Individuals should consider it regardless of what position that they hold, because it's just a great learning experience.
I'd say be prepared to be out of your comfort zone if you want to network, because librarians are pretty...
Introverted,
yep, and clicky. You know, people know each other, and if you're going by yourself, you got to break through those.
You'll run into people you know.
Well, I've only been in the system for a year. You know, I'm pretty new to the library world, so I literally knew no one.
By next year, you'll know
the faces
everybody.
I vaguely recognized from our own system. So I kind of just spent the day wandering and then talking to whoever I happened to sit next to in each session. And it was worthwhile, but it was also.
And the introvert sitting next to you
stressful.
Was like, who is this guy talking to me?
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
Introverts unite, but separately.
I guess I had thought about maybe I'm slightly extroverted. I'll just sit and start talking to anybody. So,
all right. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
You're welcome. Thank you.